New COVID-19 cases in Texas start to flatten. The university continues to prepare for a fall semester, and many questions are still unanswered. I'm Owen Simpson. Welcome to the first episode of Optimist Overtime. Optimist Overtime is a product of the ACU Optimist and is aimed to focus on two areas of discussion. The first half, we'll be talking about the local ACU community, what's going on, and hopefully we can bring some guests on the show along the way. The second half is really aimed at diverting to more state and national news and voicing our opinion on those matters. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about with that today. If you were a student, professor, or faculty member who would be interested in joining the show at some point in time to discuss a certain topic, local or national, you can email me at editor@jmcnetwork.com. All right, shall we begin? We are less than a month away from the supposed start of the 2020 fall semester, and we still don't have an exact plan of returning. We do have some information that we'll get to in just a second, but we're still waiting on several important details. All right, so here's what we know. Firstly, face coverings will be mandatory for all indoor spaces on campus and outdoors when social distancing is not possible. Second, the semester will move online after Thanksgiving break. A lot of universities are doing this, and it's really aimed at the assumption we're going to see a new spike, that the cold comes back. That's what we're going to end up seeing. But who knows where we'll be then. Thirdly, class schedules have changed. If you haven't looked at your class schedule since July 12th, I'd probably check it out because it's changed a little bit. There are classes during what would be chapel time, so that's going to be pretty interesting to see how all of that really unfolds. Now, here are some of the things we don't know, and there's a lot we don't know. We don't know what freshman and sophomore move-in will look like. I assume it would be something like spring move-out, where it was staggered and you had to sign up on a sheet. Only so many people were allowed in the dorm at a certain time, but still no official word on that. We don't know what Wildcat Week will look like. I know that some people have been talking about the idea that they're going to really just be cutting down on only essential personnel, whatever that means, because there are a lot of people involved in Wildcat Week, so that's going to be interesting. We have no idea what the protocol will look like if a student tests positive. I was talking to a professor a couple weeks ago, and he said that if a student tests positive, now this is not confirmed, this is just what the professor is saying. He said that if one student tests positive, every class that the student takes, those classes move online for 14 days because they were in direct contact. Now, if this is true, we're not going to have any in-person classes 3 to 4 weeks in with the semester. Now, we're really the least at-risk population when we contract this virus. The science shows that. Some studies even suggest that 0 to 20-year-olds are more likely to die from the flu, but I understand concern from the older professors. This is why I think other schools and universities should be doing something really completely different. I've heard the suggestion by a few people. Lots of teachers are concerned about returning, especially older teachers and those who have pre-existing conditions. Really what this suggestion has been, and I've heard about it a little bit, is really when we talk about, for example, preschool, it's really like a daycare for parents who both parents work jobs and they need somewhere to drop off the kid for the day. So when you take preschool to an online service, that changes everything. So what I've heard is for teachers who are older, have pre-existing conditions, who really are concerned about coming back to this class setting, well, this suggestion, and I just don't understand why people have not considered doing this, is, okay, let's bring a proctor in to replace the teacher in person, someone younger, less concerned about contracting the virus, more likely to recover, and we can bring the teacher on in an online Zoom session to the class. So we have all these preschoolers, this isn't just preschool either, it's elementary, middle school, high school, where they are needing to get an education. And then for the younger group, preschool, elementary, this is really an opportunity for the parents to continue working, because if you pull those kids out, that's a financial burden on the guys. So why not just have the teacher Zoom online if they're not really sure if they'd like to return or not? So I don't understand why this hasn't been an idea that's been thrown out, even to colleges too, because we have a lot, especially in ACU too, is we have a lot of professors who are the at-risk population. All right, so when I look at some of these plans that ACU has brought to the community, they make sense. I think the university has gone above and beyond for a safe as possible trip back to campus, but here's the inevitable truth. When you bring back 5,000 students to one centered location, these students are from Austin, Dallas, Houston, and other hotspot areas across the country. They're going to bring COVID-19 with them. That's the inevitable truth. That's why I really think that if we see a 14-day period of online instruction when someone tests positive in the class, I think almost every class will be online for at least a short period of time early in the fall, because you have one student. That's five classes immediately online. So we've been actually tracking here at The Optimist how many students in Abilene are testing positive. We've seen as much as 14 active cases. Right now it's down to five as of yesterday. And we hardly have anyone here. So again, what's going to happen when you bring back 5,000 students? That's the inevitable truth. I think that's something we as a student body really need to realize. This thing is not going away anytime soon, but I don't think that we can just keep staying inside until we either get a vaccine or it just dies out, because we could be dealing with this well into 2021. That brings me to where Texas stands right now. Obviously, Texas has been hit pretty hard with new cases over the past month and a half. The deaths have been kept far lower than states like New York and New Jersey. As of July 24th, Texas had just over 4,500 deaths, but there is some good news. Since July 15th, Texas has steadily been decreasing in new active cases per day. The 7-day moving average has begun to decrease, which is the first in nearly 2 months. So progress there, to say the least. Deaths, while more minimal compared to other states, are still relatively high, but with a decrease in new cases, we may start seeing a decrease in deaths in the coming weeks. Well, we have hit our midway point in today's podcast. Up next, we'll dive into some of the more pressing national topics. You've been listening to The Optimist Overtime. All right, here we go. There's a few things I'd like to touch over going on right now, but obviously COVID is still a huge pressing matter right now in our country, and it likely will be for the foreseeable future. So for this week, it's all about COVID. Sorry, guys. Now, the thing that continues to bother me about this in general is how the media continues to represent states as good and bad based on what they've done right and wrong to stop the spread of the virus, because here's the honest truth. No one has the answers of how to stop the spread of this virus. It truly is unbelievable how the media will praise Governor Andrew Cuomo from New York about how well he has done against this virus. Okay, New York has over 32,000 dead Americans. Second to them is New Jersey with 16,000 deaths. Meanwhile, Texas and Governor Greg Abbott and Florida's Ron DeSantis are the bad guys with under 10,000 deaths combined. In case you didn't know, Governor Cuomo ordered sick patients to be put in nursing homes, and he's praised by the media. It's unbelievable. In fact, I'm going to give you a list of all the states' death counts and then give you a better number, deaths per million, to account for different populations. All right, so here's the list for most deaths per world or meters, which collects data from Johns Hopkins. Number one, New York, 33,000. Number two, New Jersey, 16,000. Number three, Massachusetts, 8,000. Number four, California, 8,000. Five, Illinois. Six, Pennsylvania. Seven, Michigan. Eight is Florida. Nine is Texas. Now I'm going to give you the list per 1 million, deaths per 1 million. Number one, New Jersey at 1,800. New York, 1,700. Connecticut, 1,200. Massachusetts, 1,200. Rhode Island, Louisiana, Michigan, Illinois, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Mississippi, Indiana, Arizona. Still not seeing the states, are we? Georgia, Colorado, New Hampshire, Minnesota, New Mexico, Alabama, Ohio, Iowa. Where is Florida and Texas? South Carolina. And at number 24 is Florida at 249 deaths per 1 million. 25, Virginia. 26, Nevada. 27, California. 28, Missouri. 29, Washington. 30, North Carolina. 31, Nebraska. And there it is. Texas at 32, 157 deaths per 1 million. Meanwhile, we have New Jersey, New York, 1,800 and 1,700. Now, just to clarify, these numbers can and will change at least a little, because Florida now has twice as many active cases as New York, and Texas just a little higher than New York. But it is extremely unlikely that Texas or Florida will even come close to where New York or New Jersey is. It's also interesting that the media doesn't say a word about California's new spike, because it is far worse than Texas right now. Again, the hypocrisy is astounding. And it's also interesting that shutdowns don't necessarily mean less cases, because Los Angeles County never really reopened. and yet they're seeing a spike in cases. Here's the honest truth. There is no perfect solution to stop the spread, so we need to stop blaming states like Texas and Florida, who have far lower deaths per million than over half the country. And not to bash Dr. Fauci, because he has been put in an incredibly difficult situation. He's learning everything as everyone else does, and he doesn't have all the answers because he's contradicted himself multiple times. Early on, only those sick had to wear a mask. That's what he said, and that's what the WHO said, that's what the CDC said. But that changed into everyone had to wear a mask, sick or not. So again, he's learning information when we are, but I think another big reason we have such a mask controversy is that up until April, health officials have always said you don't really need to wear a mask until you're sick. And even the WHO, the World Health Organization, is still not really saying everyone needs to wear a mask back in May. There's also this false narrative that America is the only country that won't wear a mask, and that's why we haven't been able to slow the spread of the coronavirus. That's not true. In fact, there are several countries that hardly wear masks, and they look far better than we do right now. There was a story from the BBC in May stating that the World Health Organization still prefers people symptomatic or those caring for sick individuals should be the only ones wearing masks. It said, quote, since the start of the coronavirus outbreak, the official advice from the World Health Organization has been that only two types of people should wear masks, those who are sick and show symptoms, and those who are caring for people who are suspected to have the coronavirus. Nobody else needs to wear a mask, and experts have given several reasons for that. One is that a mask is not seen as a reliable protection as other methods, given that current research shows the virus is spread by droplets and contact with contaminated surfaces. So it could protect you, but only in certain situations, such as where you're in close quarters with others, where someone infected might sneeze or cough near your face. This is why experts say frequent hand washing with soap and water is more effective, end quote. Now, looking at specific countries, let's see if this backs up on the data, if are masks really helping? And I'm not saying that they aren't, but here's the data. According to Bloomberg, less than 40% of the UK are wearing masks. Australia is sitting under 20%, and then countries like Denmark and Sweden never really closed down or wore masks. Meanwhile, the US is around 78% after not wearing too many masks early on. We've seen a rise in the mandatory mask mandate since March. So what exactly are these countries experiencing now? The UK has 298,000 cases as of today. This is July 23rd. And 45,000 deaths, or 671 deaths per 1 million. Meanwhile, the U.S. has just 444 deaths per 1 million. So as of right now, it seems that America has done a better job at keeping their citizens alive, but that number could change right now. Australia, where less than 20% are wearing masks, saw an initial spike back in March, and then it went really quiet. It's seen a new spike recently. Nevertheless, Australia has 13,000 cases and 133 deaths, or 5 deaths per 1 million. Let's move on. Denmark. Denmark also saw an initial spike, but nothing since. It's been gradual, limited cases since the spike back in March. They have 13,000 cases, very similar to Australia, and 612 deaths, or 106 deaths per 1 million. Drastically lower than the U.S., but higher than Australia. Sweden never shut down in any way, shape, or form. This was going to be really interesting when we started this early on. Is the big news was Sweden wasn't shutting down, they weren't mandating masks, and there's been some mixed results. In fact, they saw a gradual rise in cases up until late June, and it's dropped since then. Sweden, as of right now, 79,000 cases and around 5,600 deaths, or 562 deaths per 1 million. Going back to the U.S., they are right now at 444 deaths per 1 million. Now, that number could change in the U.S., but Sweden did absolutely nothing and just slightly above us in the deaths per 1 million. So again, to say that masks or shutdowns solve the problem with the virus, it's just not the case. We see here with the data that many things have been tried and we've seen completely different outcomes. I'm not saying masks don't work or lockdowns don't work, but clearly the United States is not the worst place to be during this pandemic. We've botched this up to be the U.S. has just absolutely botched this thing. All on Trump, all on the states, all on the governors. We have the most cases in the world, but we're 11th in deaths per million for each country. Long story short, We don't have the answers. Nobody does. Nobody has the exact answers to combat this virus. So we need to stop pretending that we do. We know that the younger population is far less likely to die from this virus, and those over 75 in nursing homes should be a priority. But needless to say, there's a lot left to be discovered about this. Some countries have tried other things. I mean, look at Australia. 13,000 cases, 133 deaths, 5 deaths per 1 million. Only 20% have been wearing masks. So masks and lockdowns alone is not going to solve this thing. We have run out of time for today. Hope you enjoyed listening to the first episode of Optimist Overtime. Again, if you are a student, professor, or faculty member who would be interested and joining the show at some point in time to discuss a certain topic, local or national, you can email me at editor@jmcnetwork.com. Have a great week, everybody. Stay safe. Take care.